Beth. You're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me, and it's time for part two of today's show, July 25th, 2012. And I am going to bring on my next guest, Rich Roll. He has been featured on CNN and has been named one of the world's 25 fittest men by Men's Fitness Magazine. He is a graduate of Stanford University and Cornell Law School. He lives in Los Angeles with his wife and four children, and when he isn't training or competing, manages the Entertainment Boutique Independent Law Group, LLP. Welcome to It's All About Food.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Oh, gosh. I am so excited to talk to you today. And I'm sorry I didn't miss you when you were here in New York for the Seed experience a month ago or so.
That was a great experience.
I just have a feeling, just from reading your book, there's a lot of energy that comes out of here. And I'm sure that it, just being in your presence, you get all charged up. So I'm sorry I missed that experience. Anyway, yeah. You have an amazing story, and I'm really glad you're sharing it with people. People love to hear stories, individual stories, especially when people have gone far into the dark and then come out into the light like you have. People love those stories, and they really help the rest of us in on our own personal journeys. And it's pretty amazing.
Oh, well, thank you.
And so we're going to talk a little bit about that, and who knows what else will happen in this half hour. Now, the thing that I have give us just a thread of your story, not too much, just enough to tease, and then I want to ask you some questions.
Yeah, sure. I started out I was an athlete in college. I was a swimmer at Stanford back in the 80s, but when my swimming career ended, so did sort of all of my interest in health and fitness, and my life just became about, you know, moving up the corporate ladder and getting married and showing up for the boss and paying the mortgage and all that kind of stuff. And during that period of time, I really lost sight of my wellness. And you know, I gained a bunch of weight, I gained 50 pounds, and more importantly, I just felt horrible. My energy levels were terrible. I was depressed. I was essentially a couch potato, and it took a little bit of a health scare for me to take an honest look in the mirror and realize that I had to make some significant changes in the way that I live my life.
I'm always wondering how to get people interested in eating a healthy diet, because for me it's a moral imperative for people to eat plants. It's horrific what's going on with factory farming today, the treatment of animals. We're devastating the environment, and people's health is just deteriorating so quickly, and it's expensive, and I just don't like people to suffer. But it's really hard to get that message across, and I think you have some insight as to what some of those things are that keep people from doing the right things, because you did have a bout with alcoholism, and then you had the issue with food.
Sure.
What is it?
Well, I think that, you know, for most people, myself included, you know, pain is really the only true motivator. You know, it's really the only thing that's ever gotten me to change any of my errant behaviors. And it doesn't have to be that way. You know, you don't have to be, you know, suffer the depths of alcoholism to realize that, you know, drinking too much is bad for you and you probably shouldn't do it. And you don't have to, you know, put on a ton of weight or suffer a heart attack to, you know, realize that maybe you should think twice about what you're putting down your throat. Unfortunately, for most people, you know, it takes that kind of severe consequence in order for them to change, and it's unfortunate. I mean, it's part of the human condition, I suppose, but, you know, if anything, I'm trying to, you know, promote this idea that, you know, you don't have to suffer like I did or like so many people did do in order to, you know, implement some simple changes that could, you know, actually make you feel better and help, you know, avoid the onset of all these congenital diseases that we're suddenly experiencing in, you know, gigantic numbers with no end in sight.
I like to think that changing your diet is really not a difficult thing, but there's something in our mind that makes it difficult. And you mentioned a few things that I kind of highlighted to myself. Change your perception, change your reality.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also talk about fear. And most people have some sort of fear that really takes control of their life and makes change so difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, when you look at, you know, change your perception, change your reality, I mean, we have this sort of very firm perspective that eating healthy is difficult, it's expensive, and it comes at the cost of flavor and taste and all of these things that we've grown accustomed to. And, you know, changing your perception means realizing or embracing the idea that none of those things have to be true. It doesn't have to be more expensive, it doesn't have to be more time consuming, and it doesn't have to come at the cost of sacrificing flavor and taste. There's some adjustments, of course, that comes with, you know, changing your palate to, you know, suit new foods or whatever, but, you know, I've realized, you know, over the last 5 years of doing this that I don't miss any of the foods I used to eat, and I actually relish the healthy foods in a way that I never would have thought possible. But, you know, it all starts with a decision and a willingness and an open-mindedness to try something new and set aside those fears or those preconceptions and step into it.
You know, reading your book, and it's amazing, and you write really well, and it was just very, it was hard to put it down. I wanted to get to the end. In some ways, it was exhausting just going through, riding up and down those hills and doing those laps and running. I mean, number one, you do things that most people would never even dream of attempting. Just amazing physical feats. And then on top of it, you did it on plant foods. And this is what many of us are so excited about because, well, you have a little paragraph in here where people ask questions, aren't you anemic? What you're doing is dangerous. How can you stand all that bland food? You can't be an athlete without steak and milk. It's impossible to build muscle without animal protein. You can't get enough calories without meat and dairy. I've never seen a vegan who looks healthy. You're missing key nutrients. You're harming yourself. Man evolved to eat animals. It's not natural. I mean, you just say it all right there, and I've heard that a million times, and you probably have too, but you've proved them all wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, again, it goes back to all of these misconceptions, many of which are perpetrated by very powerful, you know, milk and dairy lobbies and the conglomerates of the food industry that want you to believe that you need certain food products in order to live and be healthy. And so many of those turn out to be inaccurate and downright misleading in cases. And you know, it's an amazing time right now because plant-based nutrition has never been sort of more popular and in the forefront of people's minds. And when you see people like Bill Clinton and, you know, prominent business people realizing the health benefits of eating this way, it's making a profound impact on our cultural zeitgeist. And you know, for me as an athlete, what's great about that is, you know, I let the results of these crazy endurance events speak for themselves. So instead of preaching to people, you should do this or you shouldn't do that, I try to just relate my experience, you know, what's worked for me. And I let the results of the athletic accomplishments, you know, establish and speak for me that not only is this possible, it's, you know, it's doable.
Now, some of the people that have said all of these things that I read just moments ago, have you changed their minds? Have a lot of athletes you've worked with or crossed paths with been impressed with what you're doing?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there are a lot of athletes now that are starting to experiment with this and realizing incredible performance gains, and not just in the endurance sports arena. You're seeing an amazing trend amongst the MMA fighters, the UFC guys. Plant-based nutrition is like all the rage in that sport right now. And, you know, when you talk about the sort of masculinity issues of being vegan and not eating meat and what that means to your manlyhood. I mean, I don't know if you've ever watched the UFC fight, but these guys are just absolute barbarians. I mean, there's nobody more masculine or vicious than these guys. And the fact that they're, you know, beating each other up on, you know, kale and spinach is kind of amazing. And even recently, you know, Arian Foster, who's a very, very prominent running back in the NFL for Houston, has adopted a vegan diet, and it's caused quite a stir amongst the sort of mainstream sports media, you know, the ESPN pundits and the like, and everybody's sort of watching closely to see how that's going to play out. So you're seeing it more and more. You know, it used to just be the crazy ultra runners and the like, but it's really spilled over into many mainstream sports, and it's really exciting to watch.
Okay, so this isn't exactly related to food per se, but you've talked in your book about when you're trying to achieve some incredible endurance feat, that you get to a place where you just let go and let things happen. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that's really profound and people could learn a lot from it.
Yeah, I mean, I used to harbor this idea that the only way that I could succeed in the world was directly related to how much I could impose my will on a certain situation. And as a youth, I experienced some success by, you know, working harder than other people, et cetera. But, you know, what I learned through my bout with alcoholism is the power of surrender and the power of letting go of conditions, situations, and people that you don't have any control over. And it's a very powerful sort of counterintuitive notion that took me a long time to grasp, but which has, you know, come to play a huge part in how I live my life and how I pursue my sport. And in endurance sports, particularly, and I guess in any sport, there are only so many things you have control over. You know, you have control over your training, you have control over what you put down your throat, and you have control over how much, you know, energy you exert in a race, et cetera, but you don't have control over your competitors. You don't have control over the weather and all these sorts of things that cause anxiety, you know, and cause us to waste precious energy and resources on worry and the like that really don't serve us. So, you know, I think that at the highest level of any sport, all the athletes are incredibly talented, and they're all training very hard, you know, probably doing very similar things. So what distinguishes the gold medalist from the also-ran? And I think, you know, more often than not, it boils down to how much domain that person has over their mental attitude. What is their, you know, mental construct over their event and their, you know, their personal well-being? And people that have better domain over their thoughts are generally going to be more successful in sport and in life, I've found.
Yep, absolutely. That voice that we hear, all those voices that we hear, we need to turn them off and just be, or let our consciousness just do what it's supposed to do. Shut that
mind. And to realize that there's a distinction between who you are and how you feel and what your thoughts are. You know, it's creating a dividing line between the thoughts that creep into your head and who you actually are as a person, and choosing which messages that pop into your head you're going to listen to and which ones you're going to dismiss.
Now, I know that here was something I was reading in your book. When you decided to go vegetarian and then vegan, it was because you were overweight, you were lethargic, you weren't feeling well, you climbed the stairs, you were out of breath. But what made you choose a vegetarian and then a vegan diet? Had you seen people on these diets that you thought might be helpful?
Well, it's an interesting question. You know, I wish I could tell you that, you know, I went to the library and checked out a bunch of books and watched a bunch of documentaries and came to this sort of well-reasoned conclusion that this would be the best route for me.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not at all what happened. I mean, I really fell into it in a very kind of accidental, organic fashion by just experimenting on my own and not initially knowing what I was doing at all. And, you know, I originally thought, well, I'll try a vegetarian diet, and the reason for that is that it seemed very black and white to me, and that's what I needed. Like, I needed something I could wrap my brain around, that seemed doable. And
but you must have known some people that were vegetarian that might have left an impression on you.
Yeah, I didn't. I was just looking for some change that I could implement that seemed simple and almost mathematic. And, you know, it's really informed by my experience in addiction recovery. It's like you're either drinking and using drugs or you're not. You know, there's no middle ground, right? And so with vegetarianism, it was like, all right, well, you're either eat or you're not. And I could, like, conceptualize that much better than just saying, well, I'm going to eat better, you know, because that didn't carry any meaning for me. So, of course, without undertaking any proper education about it, it wasn't long before, you know, I was basically just eating vegetarian, you know, unhealthy vegetarian foods like Domino's pizza and french fries and trying to convince myself that that was healthy when, of course, it's not. So, after several months of doing that and, you know, of course, not losing any weight and not feeling any better, I was ready to bag it completely when I thought, well, I wonder what would happen if I took it one step further and got rid of the dairy and got rid of the processed foods. And I did it almost as a dare to my wife to prove that it wouldn't make any difference. So the joke was on me when, you know, a week later I felt amazing. And that's when I realized there was something going on and that I should probably undertake a little study to learn more.
Yeah, that's funny. I try and tempt people like that and tell them, look, just do it for 3 weeks. Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong, because it doesn't take that long to feel the positive effects.
No, I mean, if you do it right, it shouldn't even take 3 weeks. You know, 10 days should probably do the trick. But, you know, people are wed in their ways, and it's a very tricky thing when you get into trying to get other people to change, you know, particularly when they're not ready to or not interested in changing.
Yes, and that's many people. And another thing, I've read Brendan Brazier's books. I know him. I've interviewed him. And he talks about how plant foods are easier to digest. And what ultimately happens is you, as an athlete, you recover a lot faster between workouts. So you can work more frequently and then get stronger. Have you experienced that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it boils down to two things. The first is nutritional density, and the second is alkalinity. And when you're eating a whole food plant-based diet, your foods tend to be much more nutrition dense than a lot of the empty calories that you get when you're eating a lot of processed foods and milk and dairy and the like, which are more difficult to digest. So when you're eating your foods, the more easily digestible they are, the more nutrient dense they are, the more easily assimilated the nutrients are into your body without having to output a lot of energy to digest the food, which of course makes you tired. So you're able to feel better and have good, strong, consistent energy throughout the day without those ebbs and flows that you get, you know, that food coma that comes after eating a big lunch or what have you. And the other thing, and Brendan talks about this a lot as well, is alkalinity. And, you know, the truth of the matter is that the vast majority of the standard American diet, when combined with environmental toxins and the stressors of our daily life, contribute to what's called a state of chronic acidosis. And that's when your body is constantly striving to maintain essentially a neutral pH, combating this, you know, constant barrage of acids that you're putting into your body to make it more alkaline. And that ends up leaching precious nutrients from your bones and all sorts of terrible things and creates an environment that's rife for getting sick and the onset of, you know, a number of congenital diseases. So when you're eating a whole food plant-based diet, it's primarily alkaline forming. And in this environment, you're much less likely to get sick. Your immune system is operating at its optimum functionality, and it's anti-inflammatory. So the sort of physical response to exercise-induced stress is minimized by this anti-inflammatory response. And what that means is your body's able to bounce back more quickly. So it's not that eating a plant-based diet inherently makes you a better athlete, but it keeps you healthy, it keeps you from getting sick, and it allows your body to repair itself more rapidly in between workouts. So when you protract that out over the course of the season, you're going to realize greater performance gains.
When I was asking you before, why did you choose vegetarian and vegan diets, and you were explaining why, I was thinking that I think it's easier when you have something that's black and white. I think it's harder when you have a diet that says you can eat a certain amount of something and mm-hmm. not go and have more than that. It's really confusing for people, but when you say you can't eat that and you can eat this,
right.
it makes it a lot simpler.
It's a lot more simple, yeah, to sort of conceptualize like I said. And also what it does is it helps break the craving cycle. So, you know, if you, you know, cravings are real and cravings are powerful. And, you know, look, if we didn't have cravings for bad food, then people would eat healthy all the time, right? So the best way to break that craving cycle is to remove that product from your diet. So if you're on a protocol where you're allowed a cheat day once a week, or you're allowed to eat a little bit of this and a little bit of that, you're never breaking the chain. You're never going to be free from that craving cycle. And, you know, what I found is that if you can survive the couple weeks of, you know, cleansing yourself from the dairy and the meat and the processed foods, that once you put a little distance between yourself and those items, you don't think about them anymore. You don't crave them on a daily basis. Maybe a craving will come every once in a while, but it's at a very low boil, and it doesn't become an overpowering thing that compels you to make an unhealthy food choice. But you have to break the cycle.
Now, I found your book very inspirational, and I don't ever intend on doing the things that you've done. But it did make me want to work out.
Well, the book only appealed to people that wanted to do crazy endurance races. I don't think I would sell very many books.
Mm-hmm. But what it told me, and there was a line in here somewhere, and I didn't dog ear it, but it was something about we only use 40% of our bodies, or we have a lot more when we think we don't, something like that. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I mean, essentially the quote, if I recall correctly, is that when we think we're at our absolute limit and can't go any further, we've actually only tapped into about 40% of what we're actually capable of. And, you know, if the book and the story is about anything, it's about the incredible resiliency and capacity and potential for the human body. You know, it's unbelievable to me to this day that I could have abused it as long as I did with drugs and alcohol and fast food and, you know, terrible eating and living habits, and then have it come back to life in the way that it has and perform at a level that it has is, you know, I still have trouble, you know, believing that what has happened has happened. And it's not me. It's actually understanding that the human body is an amazing thing. And when that's combined with a healthy state of mind and a healthy diet and the like, that your potential is untapped. And so, you know, the book, if you can just give me another minute here, I would say that, you know, on a surface level, it's about a guy who's, you know, unhealthy, overweight, and, you know, gets back together and goes and does these crazy endurance races that nobody else is going to do. And yeah, it is about that. But really what it's about is, you know, these endurance events are really intended as a metaphor, because I think everybody has sort of that dream deferred or that challenge they wanted, whether it's athletic or something completely different, that just gets cast aside in the course of our busy lives. And really the book is a call to action to, you know, tap into yourself and figure out what that thing is that you always wanted to do and start, you know, making some changes in your life to make it happen.
Yeah, well, I definitely got that, and I really enjoyed reading it. I was going to... I just for anyway, it was just so powerful to see what the body could do, and we have to remember that, because so many people are afraid. You mentioned fear before, and we're afraid, and we think we can't do things with our bodies, and also how forgiving the body can be. We can beat on it for decades and do horrible things to it, and then if we turn around and nourish it, it heals, it can get strong, and And your story is so good at letting people know that they really can clean up their act. You know, some people, they go on a diet and then they cheat and they feel like, oh, there's, what's the point? But the point is the body is forgiving and can heal.
Right.
Yeah.
It's more forgiving than the human mind. Like, you'll beat yourself up over a bad choice, and the body will forgive you if you just start treating it right again.
Yeah, and the mind is so powerful and can push us to do so many things beyond what we believe is possible. So thanks for showing us that. And thanks for joining me today on It's All About Food, Finding Ultra.
Thanks so much for having me.
And your website is richroll.com, and you also sell a number of products that kind of assist if people are interested in endurance and athletic training.
Yep, absolutely. We have a cookbook, and I also have a athletic recovery product, and you can find those at jailifestyle.com, jailifestyle.com. And for anyone who wants to follow me online, I'm always on Twitter, and I'm just at Rich Roll.
Great. Thank you, Rich. Thank you so much for joining me. It's All About Food.
Hi. Right.
I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Please visit my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. Send me emails at info@realmeals.org, and have a delicious week. Bye-bye.